Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Kyle Roach. He's a SDR manager over at Lessonly, and this guy is going to teach us how he teaches his team how to sell the dream. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Colin. I'm stoked to be here. I've got my llama shirt on. I got some selling socks on. I'm ready to hit it. Let's do it.
Selling socks. You got special selling socks?
I have special selling socks. Yes.
I gotta see these. Are you flexible enough to like show?
Yeah. Hold on. These are actually my sales loft selling socks. So I'll rep some sales loft selling socks today.
Right on.
I knew this was coming, so I had to make sure I was prepared and ready to go.
Now, depending on the day, do you have prospecting socks and closing socks to like bring good sock vibes to the world? Or
I wish. I just have some selling socks and I have some Lessonly socks. So if I'm really wanting to rock the Lessonly llama vibe and culture, then I got head to toe. I'm ready to go.
Okay, I didn't get that at first. Your mascot is the llama, so it's the
Lessonly. Our mascot, llama. Yeah. We are a llama culture. His name is Ali. You got this whole idea of Dalai Lama, wisdom, knowledge, right? They're a little quirky. They're a little that's different. Awesome. And that's Lessonly in a nutshell. So there we go. I pitched Lessonly. We can just call it.
That's great. I thought you were just jazzed about your llama shirt.
I'm really excited. I do love llamas. There was a specific reason. So I'll try and sit up here and make sure.
Cool. Yeah, without the connection, you're like, I got my llama shirt on. I was like, good for you.
Great. Yeah. Like, what the hell is this guy talking about?
Wife doesn't look at the clothes you wear before you leave the house.
She picked it out. I don't know what that says.
But. Oh, that's great. It looks good, man. Let's see a full version of it. I keep looking up, like as if I just stand a bit higher.
Right?
I've done it twice now.
There we go.
That's awesome, man.
This is a full Ali Lama picture.
The Ali Lama. That's great. So I want to, before we get into like selling the dream, because it has so much to do with like having our sales team, our sales development team have a big impact when you're, you know, writing these emails, when you're getting prospects on the phone, they've got to be able to sort of sell the dream, especially because these aren't inbound leads we're working. These are like outbound deals we're trying to generate. And so you really like selling the dream is sort of the number one thing you got to be good at. You seem pretty uniquely positioned to teach, given your previous history. Do you want to tell us about? Let's just start by telling me about the journey, how you got into this.
Yeah. So in a previous life, I was a high school Spanish teacher, which you would never know looking at me, but I absolutely loved this idea of teaching and education and just the relationships you can build there. Fell in love with it. Taught for 4 or 5 years, and when I was kind of looking at the next step. I found Lessonly in my backyard, and we're not ed tech per se. We don't work with like K-12 schools or anything, but the mission was kind of the same. Whereas, you know, as a teacher, you're trying to help your kids, you know, learn and get better at these skills they're going to carry with them for the rest of their life. Like Lessonly was just trying to help teams do better work. So there's just this really nice natural transition. And at the time we were about 20 people. So we totally didn't know what the hell we were doing. But, you know, still trying to figure out the market and all those things. And I just basically said, where can I fit in here? Like, this is such a cool company. It's such a cool culture. Like, what can I do? I'll mop the floors. And they said, well, we can have you be a sales, you know, an SDR, a sales development rep. And I said, sign me up. Like, I'm ready to go teaching. If I can teach a bunch of middle school kids, if I can chaperone a middle school dance, surely I can call the CEO and get him to, you know, take a meeting with us. So that's how it transitioned. It worked out. I'm still here. Now I get to manage the team, and it's a blast.
Dude, that's wild. And so another recent development. So, you know, say a year and a half ago, your SDR team rolled up under sales, but you changed that last year.
We did. We rolled up totally underneath our sales org, and that's the way it had always been. We had just been kind of rocking and rolling that way. And I think what happened is as you start to get from like 50 to 100 employees, like, so ours was right around 50, we just started to notice that our sales development team was doing a lot more with marketing. And then we had a really active marketing team. We were, you know, just really honing in on ICP. We were figuring out all the account sourcing and how we do that. Then we had events, and it just started to make a lot of sense. And then we'll talk about this, but it was just like this idea of like SDRs were kind of the boots on the ground for this marketing push we were going to make as we went to market. So that that was the initial push. So we moved up underneath our marketing team, and we've been doing that now for almost 8 to 9 months.
Man, that's great. So talk to me about the, like, being the boots on the ground. Cause I totally agree. We don't have a sales and marketing team per se. We all roll up under the rev team. So shared metrics, shared dashboards, everything. And it just sort of evolved out of, you know, I don't know. I spent most of my life in sales before starting this company. And I got so tired of, you know, there being a huge gap between this team who is, you've got a ton of smart people that can, you know, when done right, can just be a huge lever for you. And I thought, you know what, this doesn't make sense to have them on, you know, they're not sharing their goals. They're not sharing comp. They're not sharing, right? They're not sharing at all. They're not helping each other. And so I thought when we, you know, it wasn't even an intentional decision. It was just, hey, we're working on this. Like, how can you get involved? And our VP of marketing has been incredible at supporting the BDR team. And so just happened naturally. So I totally agree.
Yeah, it was the same here. Kyle Lacey, our VP of marketing, I think he just recognized that we've got these really hungry group of people that are just on fire for what we're doing here. And so it was like, why not take them and like, let's kind of roll that all up into one spear and like, let's really go at this, right? Let's all get in the same boat and start rowing together. And so that's what we did. And we just kind of, we took this approach of appreciative inquiry, which is a really cool book. I would highly recommend it, but it's just a great find to say like, what's working here and what was going well. And we just started asking ourselves that over and over and over again. And like, tell me about a time when it did work well, when we, you know, had a great prospecting email or when we had a great cold call, like what were the circumstances? And we just started asking that. And what we learned through that was we had really dynamic, really bright people. And then we started winning with this like highly personalized messaging. And so we started there and then it just kind of kept growing and growing and growing. And now we're here and just crushing it as a result. So appreciative inquiry is definitely the way to go there. I think it was really easy to say, we could have said, hey, we have all these problems. What do we want to fix first? And instead we said, what's working? And we just did more of that.
That's really cool. I did a quick Google and I could find like a Wikipedia reference and then like a Champlain.edu.
The Finn Book of Appreciative Inquiry, I think, is the full title. Sue Hammond is the author. Beautiful. Really great book. It's a super quick read, but highly recommend it.
Cool. I'm going to throw that in the show notes as soon as
for sure,
just so anybody listening can check that out. Cause I know whenever I'm listening to podcasts and people are like, oh yeah, it's this book, I'm like, please ask them where I find this book, or like, please ask them more or more information. And then just like throw that link there, make it easy for me.
Yeah, man. Absolutely.
Awesome. So that really helped. I love the way you're thinking about it. Like the SDRs being the boots on the ground. What did that transition look like? Right. So I think I understand why, but talk to me about that transition. Cause you know, it sounds so simple. Okay. Well, you know, one day you report to sales, one day you report to marketing, but it's one of those things. It sounds simple, but it's probably a little bit more complex than that.
Yeah. A lot more complex. So once we made that transition, the first thing we did was what I just said was like, we just started with this, what's working and what's going well. And as I said, we found we had really bright people and we were saying, pretty like when we were winning, when we were setting meetings and when we were closing those, it was because of pretty personalized, relevant messaging in our email and in our phone calls. The problem was it was really hard to scale. And so we sat down with marketing, we started saying like, okay, like how do we make this better? Like how do we do more of what's working? And so what we came up with was this idea of just like isolate the variables. Let's get everything down on paper and let's put a cadence together as a like a base cadence, or let's just do all these things and then let's just start testing each piece of it. And I think that was the big difference between sales and marketing is, we were all salespeople. And it's like, yeah, I'm trying this and it's working and I'm doing it and it's great. And you know, everything's closing 120% to go. And they're like, then a marketing person comes on and says, okay, well, let's A-B test. I'm like, I don't have time to A-B test. Like, forget that. And so it was a really hard shift from a mindset perspective. But once we did that from an SDR team, we started to recognize like, oh, this is a better way to think because we could actually continuously, rapidly improve on every test we ran. And so we just isolated the variable in the sense of like, all right, here's our 9-day cadence. We're going to just test email one. the rest of it may be crap. That's fine for a moment, but like, let's just focus on email one. And then we'd be like, all right, email two or call three. And so we did that. And then we paired it with what we called like this tall to ride metrics. And I think a lot of times that was just the way it was easiest for me to think about, because like a lot of times you'll set goals and people think, I hit my goal. Great job. I'm done. But what we said was like, we want people to go above and beyond, like keep pushing, but at least you have to do this. Like at the minimum, you got to be this tall to ride. And so we did that with like total activity, number of calls a week, number of contacts that they add into a cadence every day. You had to be this tall to ride. And that eliminated any question or variable of like, are we working hard enough? Right. So, isolate the variables, this tall to ride metrics. Those were some of the first things we did. And then the last thing that tactically we started to do is we took a metric for every step in the funnel. And we tied them to, we just tied performance to that metric. So number of visitors to the site, boom, number of forms filled, there was our lead. And we just tracked it all the way down the funnel and just tied sales and like that marketing and sales funnel. We could just get a really clear picture, and that made it easy to find the lever to pull.
It sounds like you turned that into a bit of a formula.
Yeah, absolutely. It just turned into this like really nice, like, you know, we had inbound, you had outbound, but it just became this really nice formula. Like we didn't know at first, we had no idea what the metrics were. We took some educated guesses, which I think is a big theme of this. We just be like, that sounds right. Let's go there and see if it works. But yeah, we were able to turn this whole thing into a formula where we start looking at conversion rates from, you know, a contact to a meeting or an account to a meeting, just by, again, locking it down and then just seeing what moved the needle.
That's fair, man. I mean, the like, let's take an educated guess and see if that works. That is the scientific process. You know,
absolutely.
Don't discredit yourself. Like, I have a friend who's doing like research in neuroscience on MS, and like he did the exact same thing. He's like, no, it happened to work out, and you know, the what he's doing is going to change how we look at MS, which is crazy. But like, he's like, yeah, I just took a guess. He's like, I had all this research, you know, supporting why I took that guess. And he's like, if it didn't work out, it would have been really bad. I wouldn't have been able to get all these grants. Like, I'm glad it worked out, man.
Yeah, absolutely. But it is. It's just an educated guess. And then you, and that just, it speaks to it, right? Because it's sales. Like, there are 1,000,010 levers that you can pull. And it would just, it's very easy to get like paralysis by analysis, right? Mm-hmm. And so pick something, make the guess, and then you have a way to measure it. And that's what we did. And it worked out spectacularly. And we're still on that journey. Like, this is a 9-month journey. We're still learning the metrics. We're still testing things that we started off with 10 months ago. So don't expect it to just get done in month one.
That's fair. The whole sell the dream thing feels like a very marketing approach to sales development.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very arts and crafts, right?
I wouldn't say arts and crafts. I think the way I think about marketing is like, there's the sort of brand side and there's the demand gen mm-hmm. side. And it feels like sort of the sales development kind of fits right in between sort of the marketing demand gen and the sort of sales, let's close some customers. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a sort of natural fit. It's interesting. You know, I've seen a lot of BDR teams that get really close to the demand gen side where they're working on more integrated campaigns. And this feels like, you know, I'm not saying you're not doing that, but I feel like the sell the dream, that feels more like coming from the brand side, which is a really interesting approach. And it sounds like it's had a huge impact, which is why I wanted to have you on the show. So tell me about that process.
Yeah. So I think let me first talk to say, like, when we say sell the dream, like, what are, like, and lessonly, like, what does that actually even mean? And for us, it's this idea that we want to sell this idea of better work, of people and employees doing better work. And we have a training software that supports that. But we don't start with the training software. We start with this idea of like doing better work. And that starts internally with how we work and with how we operate. And then we sell that, or we push that dream out into the market as kind of our primary go-to-market strategy, rather than just saying, hey, we're a software that solves XYZ thing. So that's what I mean when we talk about like selling this dream. And it all starts with this idea of, and I think you'll hear this from a lot of different people about this, you know, product differentiation kind of not really being a thing anymore. Like, if you go feature to feature with a competitor, like you're going to win some, you're going to lose some, but it's going to be really hard to grow on that because people, consumers are starting to buy with their gut and we're seeing that more and more, and they want to be associated with a brand and a movement. And so that's kind of what we're doing here. Like we're just saying, hey, like let's start really pushing this idea of doing better work. And we can show you how to do that. And so we live it and we live it every day. And then we start selling on that. And it was a total brand thing initially. Like that was kind of our brand tagline. And it was like, great. But there was a disconnect because this was all the collateral that brand was making was about do better work. And everything SDRs were saying was training software or solve this. And so there was a really big disconnect. And it's like, let's get all in the same boat and start rowing.
So, and I know you probably weren't super involved in all the branding stuff, but yeah. Can you talk to me about the process of sort of defining that dream?
Yeah, totally. I think it started with a couple of things. Like, I think it started with like a company mission, and we got very lucky. We had a good mission statement at the like 6 years ago. And it was, we help teams do better work or employees do better work so they can live better lives. Like that was our mission statement when Max first started the company. It was like, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. So we recognized that there was this kind of like piece of that do better work that we could grab. So I think start with a company mission and just say like, why? Like, why are we selling what we're selling? And any company can do this. Like just ask yourself, like, why are you doing this? And then ask as an individual, like, why am I doing this? Like, why did I join this company? Like, then you start to connect those two. And I think you start to see patterns and you start to recognize that there are some similarities there. And then ask your customers, right? Then you go to your customers and say, hey, why did you buy from us? Like what made you say, yeah, I want to invest in the software. Like surely there was a software piece, but there must've been something else. And you combine all those three things. And I guarantee you come up with at least a pretty good guess of your dream or your mission. And from there, it's just branding it and getting it out in the market.
Awesome. So basically it started with the mission statement. Then you sort of talked to your customers, you looked for the patterns, translated that into sort of a dream that you could sell.
Yeah. And again, it goes back to what we said, like once you kind of get that pattern, take a guess, put something in there and then go for it, you know, like take it to market and see how it feels. And if you wanted to go back to those customers and say, hey, we're thinking about kind of talking more about this, would you have considered this? And they would say, yeah, or heck no, that doesn't resonate at all. And you can iterate again.
That's great. It feels like, and we talked about this a little bit in the pre-interview, but it feels like, I always want to call him Simone Sinek, but I know that's wrong. It's Simon Sinek.
Yes.
I think it's the, like the French Canadian, I'm not French Canadian, but it's like learning French in school. Sort of my brain initially goes to like a word like that. It goes to like French impression. First,
I was impressed. At first, I was like, "Wait, who?" And then now I'm catching up. I'm with you.
Yeah,
now.
Sounds like some fancy. Yeah, yeah. I love the his TED talks. I think his TED talks are great. The book is basically his TED talk, but expanded on. So like,
yeah, exactly. That whole idea of like starting with the why, right? And he just says like, start with the why, then you go to the how, then you go to the what. And at the core, I think you know we didn't like make that our mission, but like it. That was how we attacked it. And it worked out really, really well for us. And just like, let's start with why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. And then we can talk about how, and then you get to what, instead of leading with we're a training software, we start talking about how can we help your team do better work? And as I said, we'll talk about this like tactically, but it just worked out really, really well when we started doing that. People started resonating and buying into this idea of a movement rather than just a training software.
Which is awesome. And we'll get to metrics after this, but and sort of the impact it's had on your team. But let's get tactical first. So talk to me about how you took this dream of yours and turned it into, you know, something that the BDRs can execute on.
Yeah. So as I said, this was something we wanted to do internally first. So we didn't just try to run this out the market. Like we wanted to be our own best use case. Like how can we do better work? And so one of the key kind of components that we thought of is like, we got to be clear. We got to actually like be clear with what we're trying to do. And for us, the best way to do that was through what we call like continuous rapid improvement. So is it okay if I share my screen here real quick?
Yeah, jump in there. And I'll link to this in the show notes. So if anybody wants to look and follow along with the visuals, it's just a set of Google slides you can have a look at.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah. So when we start to tactically take this idea of selling a movement, selling a vision, like that's, again, it's really easy to just let that be ambiguous and just kind of let that out there. And we needed it to penetrate our messaging. We needed to penetrate how we spoke to people on the phone, how we handled objections, everything. It needed to penetrate every single thing we did, how we talked to people on LinkedIn, how we posted on LinkedIn. I mean, you name it, everything. And that's a lot of things. And again, pick one and start with it. And here's the this is the process we ran on every single one of those things. And we're still running. So super not great name, but continuous rapid improvement model. We just talk about it all the time. These are just what we always do. So the first thing is we just decide, pick your variable, start with one. And the more defined your test, the clearer your results will be. So the first group, as an example, that we wanted to try this with was we said, hey, appreciative inquiry. We work really, really well with companies who just fundraised, usually a Series B plus. So anything past a Series B, we just typically win there. We do well with those types of companies. So we said, all right, define that. So that's the group, and we're going to put this new messaging out there. So that was the decide piece to this. Then you got to document it. Otherwise there will be too many stakeholders, and you won't get the buy-in, and you'll just meeting yourself to death trying to constantly get this thing going. So take time, take an hour, whatever, and just document it. It doesn't have to be pretty, but just answer the key questions that you're going to get asked in that first meeting. What are we doing? Who's involved? What do I need to do, right? Basically, if you've got your VP of marketing or your chief sales officer, and they're basically going to say okay, great. What do I need to do? Is there anything here? And then be clear on how you know you'll win or lose that test. So just document all of that, and then you just start iterating on that document, and all of a sudden you've got a pretty nice timeline laid out as to how you can actually attack this. The third, we just say deploy. So go put it in action, go run with this. You're going to want to fully bake this out. I think that's our natural tendency, is to build in a vacuum and get it all perfected, and then just present it to the world as Simba from the Lion, oh, look at this great thing we did. Get it out there, knowing that it's not going to be perfect. That's okay. The only caution is just make sure you have some defined red flags that let you know, for lack of a better way, I'll say this, that the shit hit the fan. Oh wait, this is totally wrong.
Nothing's working here. Pull the ripcord. Bail.
Bail. Yeah, exactly. Bail out. So know what that metric or that thing is. What's that red flag that tells you I am way off course here. This did not work. But have that, but otherwise just go and get micro feedback inside of that, and you're going to do really well there.
Cool.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I recognize that this is not usual content for a sales podcast. I thought it was super important because it's something that as a salesperson myself, I hadn't really done a lot of, I hadn't run through this process before sort of starting this company or something like this. So I thought this was super critical, a super critical lens to look at when you're looking at testing and iterating on messaging. It's to the point where we basically have an outbound labs function now, because we realized, predictable revenue has been out for quite a while, and you can't just be sending the same email over and over and over again. And so we started earlier this year or late last year, we started basically outbound labs, where every person that works sort of on this one team gets 20% time to build and test and run these different tests. And we had our product manager actually sort of design, here's how you run each of the tests. And it really mimics this process very similarly, slightly different, but process I'll let you jump in a second.
You're good.
Process has had a massive impact on the team when it comes down to learning. If I look at the results before, we had good results before, but they were all over the place, and we didn't actually learn anything from it. It was a bunch of individuals that were just figuring things out on their own, and we lost so much of that tribal knowledge sort of died because it didn't actually make it into the rest of the tribe. It sort of resided mm-hmm. with one person. They did it and they either, you know, moved up to a different role or moved on to a different company, and we'd forget about that. So I think this process, I just want to stress, super critical, especially if you're looking to sort of intentionally learn and evolve your process. Sorry, Kyle.
I was just going to jump. No, hey, you're good. I was going to jump on and just say, like, our two directors of sales and our president who kind of heads up all of our sales, they use the same process, and they can do it for their first call deck. They can do it for negotiate, like any part of your process where you might be recognizing that you want to fix or you want to test something. Like, this is the process that they use as well. So this is totally transferable to a lot of things. And again, totally respect that. And it's a great point to point out, because it could seem like, hey, this seems just like very in the weeds, but we use it at all parts of our sales funnel to kind of indict every piece and try and make it, you know, 1%, 5%, 10% better.
That's great. So that's part of this process here.
Yeah. Just get back together and discuss and look at the measures. How did you win? You know, you put them in place in an earlier phase. Like, did it win? Look at the quantitative, but look at the qualitative. Like, ask yourself, how did this make our sales reps feel? Like, how did they feel about doing this? Were they pissed off or did they love it? What were the reactions on a call or on an email? Like, what were some of the responses? It's kind of hard to track like all of that stuff, but just ask some qualitative questions as well. And man, when you do that, it you start to recognize like, hey, this is the thing. And then you go and you put it in place, and all of a sudden you have a better working piece of your pie.
That's
great. If it's a new email, a new call, whatever the case might be.
And so I think the next step, you've got a template or something you can share that's like a version of what you had ran for one of your campaigns. Mm-hmm. There we go. The B+ project.
Yeah. So I was talking about this earlier, right? So like this idea of, we just said, let's take a bunch of companies who just raised a Series B or further fundraise, and let's start documenting. So this is just an example of like how we documented that and like some of the ways that we win, who's involved, and then some of the don't miss, you know, key dates and actions. So I can hand this to everybody in the room as we kick this off and say, all right, here's what I need. I need you to do this. I need person B to do this and person C to do this. I'm going to take the ownership on the rest of it. And then here's when we're going to run it, so everybody can be on the lookout in case they see those red flags.
That's great, man. And I know this is just a summation of the process, but I think the defining, you know, what you're looking for ahead of time can have just such a massive impact.
Yeah. Yeah. Like just kind of like, here's the dream state. Like if this works really, really well, like this is what we expect will happen. That's how we did it. And even again, I go back here and you see some of those like qualitative metrics can be just as important. So like one of there, we just said is like, do SDRs get positive responses? Like instead of just like a F off or a, you know, unsubscribe, do they get a, hey, thanks, but no thanks. Like that's a good win. That means our brand resonated with them a little bit. That means they bought into this movement, even if for a moment. That's a win for us. We like that. And there's no way to like totally measure that quantitatively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know it's the most obvious thing, saying, oh, you know, I like picking what you want to, the goal you want to hit ahead of time. I just think to the, so many times of whether I've worked with teams that are doing this or I've done it myself, not coming from this background of just saying, oh, I'm just going to run a split test. Right. I'll just test this messaging. Right. Maybe I'm changing one variable in the template at a time, but you're not, it doesn't accumulate to learning, you know, mm-hmm. accumulates to gut as opposed to just like, okay, well documented, well thought through, you know, plan for continuously sort of improving.
Yeah. And I think the beauty and the simplicity of this is that, this might be exciting or scary to some, is that you could do this at a rep level. Like I've had my SDRs like come with me with a great idea. They're like, oh my gosh, we should totally test, this way, this pitch, like, we should pitch it this way. We should say this thing. I'm like, great. That's awesome. Document it. Like, yeah. I'm in. Let's try it, but document it. And here's the template. So like we can actually do that. Otherwise you have been other, it's really easy to just say, great, go do it. And let me know what happens. And 2 weeks later, you're like, hey, what happened there? And they're like, I don't really know. It's like, well, we didn't learn anything. We didn't get any better. And we just kind of like, basically I equated it to, we just rode in a circle. Like we lost time because we just rode the boat in a circle because we had no forward movement from that.
That's fair. So speaking of like forward movement and updates, you actually overhauled all of your messaging. So email mm-hmm. templates and cold calls using this process, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
So talk to me about that process. What are your templates and let's start with templates. So what does that look like now? And what does your process look like now?
Yeah. So it goes back to like pick something and go with it. So for us, we click here to the next, just so you can kind of like see, like we just picked a base cadence. And we said, all right, here's the base cadence. This could be the worst cadence in the world. It wasn't, but like we could just, you know, you could just start with something.
And so for those that are not watching, but are just listening, it's day one, first email, 20% personalization. Day two in the morning, follow-up, air quotes, thoughts email. Day two afternoon, LinkedIn Connect. Day three, call. Day five, email, short personalized. Day seven, demo video. Day nine, final call. And day nine, apologies email.
Absolutely. So when we thought this out, we looked at what was working best, and every SDR at the time were in their own sequence or cadence. They had their own kind of ritual that they were going through. And so we just took the best pieces from each one and put them into one cadence and said, all right, let's try this. So, for example, day one, 20% personalization. That's the big stat that's going around right now in sales development. It's like the max response rate comes when you personalize basically the first 20% of an email. The rest should be templatized. If you do less than 20%, you risk being too generic. If you over-personalize, you risk getting too far away from the core message and actually missing the mark on what you're trying to say. So that was the first thing we did. So we basically, we use sales loft cadence, as I mentioned by my socks earlier. And so what we did was we put templates in. Here's the implication and here's the pitch. So like here's the problem statement and here's the pitch and here's the ask. You go up top and you write your own customization. There's your 20%. Wordsmith anything that you need to, and then you ship it away. So that was the first step, right? Once we made that first step, then we started working on the pitch. And that's where we started to really intentionally think about selling the movement. So our original pitch, kind of our base pitch, was we're a training software built to do X, Y, Z things. You could import, take your software, take your company, and it works the same way. Like we do this thing.
These are the features. This is how you describe our software. We're learning management software. Or yep. Whatever it is. Yeah.
Exactly. We're sales engagement. We are contact data provider. We are a list provider.
Yep. We are a custom sock provider.
Custom sock provider. There you go. Yeah, spot on. And so that was our first pitch, was we would try to make that very intentional. And then we started flipping it, right? And so once we got that documented, then we started flipping it and we rewrote the messaging. And we brought the SDRs in on this and helped us and said, hey, let's get rid of less than we is. Like, let's stop saying that first and try and change up the messaging. And what it turned into was less than we helps. And so we started saying that, like, less than we helps teams do better work. Or we're on a mission to help sales teams do better work. And so that's where we started to start that changing that pitch. And then we would go into the actual, like, what we do. But we always started with like, hey, we're on a mission to help teams do better work, because we know that when your reps have all the information they need, they can crush their quotas. That's why we built this training software. And so starting with that why, it got people connected into like, I can buy into that. And so we just took that and recognized that it worked. And then you move on to the next email, and we just worked our way down this cadence, testing every piece that we could.
So I want to make sure I heard you right, and I'm just understanding. So
yeah,
problem statement, pitch, ask was the template you started with, and then the pitch used to be, Lessonly is a sales enablement, learning management, micro learning services company.
yeah.
Did you flip that, and so the problem statement comes after that, or did you just flip between the old messaging to the new sort of more selling the dream focused?
Yeah, we flipped straight to the selling the dream, to selling the movement.
Start your template with selling the dream. Sorry to cut you off there.
No, yeah, you're fine. Yeah, absolutely. That's the way our template works. So they still have that intro, that personalized piece.
Yeah.
And once they do that, they step right into that whole idea of, let's sell the dream here. Let's sell this movement rather than a software.
Okay. Cool. And talk to me about what are they looking for when they're personalizing, right? Because I think everybody's saying, you know, we've had guests on a couple of years ago that said, you know, look at their LinkedIn. You know, I've had people that say, you know, try and find trigger events. I know people that use intent data that are trying to do that. So I'm curious, when you're training your team, what are you looking for with, you know, for creating that problem statement?
Yeah. So this is going to be a bit of a two-part, kind of three-part answer here. We coach to like look for the thing that you can tell a story on, right? And so if you can look for that thing that you can start to tell a story and connect to the movement, or connect to that pitch, that's what's going to resonate the most. And so typically for us, what that is compelling events around the company. So look what's going on at the company. Are they hiring? Are they growing? What's going on in their press releases? Like, get a feel for that. And that's gonna start off really well. The second piece would then go to the person and say, okay, what's the personal piece to this? Like, what are they posting on LinkedIn? What are they tweeting about? That's always a great one to kind of go to. What are they sharing? What are they liking? So that's kind of the second piece. And then we just say, like, what, connect that to this whole idea of like selling the movement. So for example, we might say like, hey, you know, Colin, you guys at Predictable Revenue are just doing a ton of stuff over there, from new podcasts to new blog posts. Like, it's clear you guys are on the uptick. Just wanted to give you a heads up that when all those things start changing, you typically start to run into this issue. But don't worry, we're here to help. Like, here's how we start thinking about doing best, you know, your best work.
Cool. I like it. So it's compelling events at the company. And then if you can sort of make it like a personalized piece. So looking at my LinkedIn, Twitter, hey, I saw you interacted with this piece of content, something along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing I would say there, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. And the last thing I would say is like, I think we've found personally that you're going to run into a lot of those accounts where it just seems like there's nothing going on. And it's just like this, and like no one posts on LinkedIn. And that's when you can really have some fun and you can actually kind of just start talking to the person's persona. It's like, hey, you're this VP of sales. Like, I bet you're doing some really cool stuff. Like, what's the big challenge on your plate? And you start talking about like what VPs of sales would typically be, you know, thinking about, and just see if you can connect into describing their world better than they could describe it. So that's become a fun one for us to play with, because it takes an SDR who maybe is just out of college trying to empathize with a VP of sales who's been, you know, in the role for 20 years. But it really works. It really works if you have some good empathy there.
I'm just typing, I'm writing it down so I don't forget. See if you can explain their world better than they can.
Yeah. And I can't take credit for that. That is Chris Orlov at Gong. He said that at Sales Loft conference last week. And I think we've been starting to say that for a really long time, but just haven't been able to do it. And he said that spot on. You're just like, yeah, describe their problem better than they can. And if you can do that, you're going to be in. I was like, that's it. We need to do more of that.
That's great, man. He's one of those guys that I've been trying to get on the podcast, but when we first started up, he was one of the first people I talked to. And then I want to say we did something and then it fell through. So good reminder. Chris, if you're listening, I'm coming after you.
Get on him. He gave a 15-minute talk at Rainmaker, and it was like, I took probably 4 to 5 pages of notes in 15 minutes just on what he was saying. It was fantastic.
That's great. I met Chris when he was starting up a Gong competitor, before he joined Gong, and, yeah, really, always really impressed by him.
Yep, smart guy for sure. He was awesome.
Cool. All right, so we did the problem statement. The pitch is, so basically your email templates are three sections. Problem statement, which is that 20% personalized. There's the pitch, which you're selling the dream, and then the ask. How do you ask?
I've always asked. I think we've started to really test this. This is one thing we're testing right now. So I'd love to put this out to the world and see what everyone else comes up with. We used to just do the traditional kind of like, would you be open to taking 30 minutes to discuss this? Or can you, you know, can we schedule some time next Tuesday to show you around this platform a little bit, right? So it's kind of the traditional 20, anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes, you know, asking for that. What we've found is a lot of people, and this is specific to our market, a lot of people own training in a company. It's not always that clear. And so we've started to change to just like, hey, with all this being said, I'm just curious, like, did anything resonate here? And just kind of leaving it there, or saying like, are you the right person? Would you be the right person to talk to? And just opening that door to just kind of a more passive conversation for a moment. And that we're starting to kind of learn and experience that that softer ask is maybe a little bit more personal, a little more human than just trying to go straight into the person's calendar. So more to come. We don't have total results on that yet. I want it to work because I again, it just feels more human, but again, I'm going to let the data talk there.
Totally. If you're testing, one thing I always like to test out is the sort of insightful questions. So if you're already getting into the head of the VP of sales, right, you've already sort of personalized it, following up that problem statement with like an insightful question. So you're building on that level of personalization to say, hey, you know, something that's a little bit deep, like, let's say I noticed that you've just hired sort of, you know, 15 salespeople in the last, you know, 12 months. Like that's a huge battle. Do you ever you've got the personalizing first line, and then the call to action is, you know, something along the lines of like the last customer that we helped, you know, and if you can name drop, you know, they experienced, you know, that most of their reps, you know, weren't doing a strong discovery or weren't doing like, you get in on a real specific thing. And I'm not sure exactly sort of what it is lessonly, like where you would want to, you know, maybe they forgot how to do a good discovery, or maybe they weren't aware of all your case studies, or maybe, right. And this is where you can sort of list and iterate on, okay, we've got the, now we're connecting it into the personalization, and then just asking that a question. Does your team ever, you know, have you ever seen a rep struggle with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that idea. I absolutely do. We've talked about that. We haven't like added it to our list, but like kind of like right after the introduction, like saying like, hey, with all this crap that you have going on there, like, I'm curious, how are you guys doing this? Like, how are you training? Or like one we love is like, if I were a rep at XYZ company, like, what would my first day look like? And just asking them some things like that and just seeing what they say. I like that a lot. That's something we can definitely test more.
It's great. I've tested it a bunch of times. I've had it both be really, really successful. I've done it in the initial email as well as a follow-up, just a standalone. So I've got this insightful question that I've written, and it'll be my like third follow-up.
I think the key is insightful, right? Like that's the big challenge is like, how do I write this in a way that's very, very human and very like actually adds value to this? So that it's not just kind of one of those cheeky, like, I'm totally selling you by asking you this rhetorical question that you may or may not be able to answer.
Would you like to have 100 more meetings every month?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So,
come on. Exactly. Not cheeky.
Exactly. That's the way.
Yeah. I'll throw the caveat in there that I've done this a bunch of times. I've had it both work really, really well, and I've had it totally fall flat and underperform what we had before. So again, if you're listening, test, follow Kyle's methods here.
Yep, 100%. So you can see if it works or not, right? Like you've got it. Otherwise, you're gonna hang on to bad things way too long, and you're gonna do good things not long enough. It's inevitable, and it's gonna drive you nuts.
Perfect. So we spent a bunch of time on email. I want to talk about your cold call scripting. So you're selling the dream. How did you adapt this to your cold call script?
Yeah. So I think that one of the key things that we're starting to recognize is like, everyone knows this, but like it's become even more important as people get less and less comfortable on the phone, just because of our culture. Like we just don't talk on the phone that much. So people get less and less comfortable, and they become a lot more skeptical too, like automatically, like guards are up. And so what we've tried to do is just be very clear and very explicit on the front end is like the reason for my call, or I'm reaching out because, however you want to say that, and then have a very clear statement. Like your reason for calling can't just be because we're a training software and you're the perfect person to talk to. Like you gotta, the reason for my call is, and if you can do that clearly and explain based on that personalized email you wrote or whatever you saw at that company, that's gonna help you. And then you ask what I call like a permission question. So we do, you know, like your intro, hey, how you been? Then we do, hey, I'm reaching out because, and then I'm just permission. Like, is this something we can talk to, or is this something we can talk about for 2 minutes? Or are you open to discussing this? Or is this a conversation you'd be willing to have right now? Or even just like, do you mind if I ask, like, can you help me out? Who owns this in your organization?
Gotcha. So intro, reason for my call, permission statement.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And if they say, yes, I've got a second, then we go into, that's when we really can start to kind of talk about that movement. And we kind of connect it. So it's like problem or challenge, insert movement as the solution. So, I'm calling you. The reason I'm calling you, as I said, is you guys just took on a round of funding, and that means a ton of growth and a ton of change. And that change hits your frontline, your sales reps, harder than anybody else, because they got to know all that information that's changing. And the best way we found to do that is to help them do better work. And the better way to do that is to get them to know all the information. And how do you do that? Like, oh, well, there's this training software. So, that's how we've done it. It's just to go to the pitch, kind of go into the movement before the software, and then you go into like the actual investigation.
Gotcha. So intro, reason for the call is sell of the brand. So, you know, we help, how did you frame it up? You know, we help companies do this, or companies turn,
in the intro or in, yeah. in the purpose statement. So we go intro, like, hey, how are you? Yeah. Purpose, I'm reaching out because, I'm reaching out because you guys just took on a load of funding, and that typically means that somebody in your organization is thinking about training your sales team. Gotcha. Can you help me out? You're the right person. If they say yes, then we go into an implication or challenge and pitch. And the pitch is based around not the software, but the, how do we help you do better work?
Gotcha. Gotcha. So reaching out because I saw this. And so you're trying on that personalized piece, and then you're asking, you know, that permission, hey, you know, are you the right person, or do you have 5 minutes? Is this something that's a pain of yours?
Yeah, it really mimics our email. If you really think about it, that first email, it's like, here's your personalization. Here's kind of why I'm reaching out. Yeah. And then if you say yes, then here's kind of the rest of the pie here.
In that reason for my call, are you mostly focused on, you know, the personalization element, or do you get into telling the brand story a little bit?
I try not to, because if you word dump too early in the call, I think any guards you maybe have let down, you've just raised right back up, because now I'm already selling this thing. So like, I can't sell the movement yet. I gotta ask permission. Like, I gotta have a conversation with you first to see if this is something you'd be willing to talk to. Gotcha. So I think that's really important. But what we also can't do is ask for permission right away. So like, hey, this is Kyle. I'm calling from Lesson Lee. Is now a bad time? Mm-hmm. It's always a bad time, right? So like, you can't ask that permission too soon. That's why we say, I'm reaching out because, did anything strike your interest there? Is this an okay time to chat?
Interesting. Because everybody's going to say, no, this is a bad time, but mm-hmm. you can have a minute. And so you're saying, hey, intro, hey, this is Kyle. You know, the reason I'm calling is personalized or problem statement. You know, do you have 5 minutes now or 2 minutes now?
Yeah. And that's also like, that's really human. Like, if I were to just call you, I would say, you know, hey, Colin, what's up? And you say, hey, I'm good. What's up with you? I would say, I'm good. Hey, I know we're supposed to do a podcast. Is 4:30 still okay? Like, I'm telling you that right now. Like, the reason I'm calling you is this. Like, that's the human way we communicate. Yeah. Why don't we do it on a sales call?
Cool. And you can, I think we can kill the content sharing now, right? We're good with that.
Yep, for sure.
Okay. So where else does this fit anywhere else into the cold call scripting, or should we move on to the next?
I think we can move on.
Cool. Cause we kind of went through your process, went through that cadence there. And I think the one thing I missed for anybody that's listening is you're adding 25 people into the top of that every day per SDR.
Yeah. And that was something we tested a ton, and that just became the sweet spot. If we go too high up above that, we risk losing that 20% personalization, and even just losing steps down the cadence. Like, you get backlogged really, really easily. Yeah. If you go underneath that, you're risking what I call like putting an air bubble in your hose, basically. Like, you're just leaving a pocket of efficiency out.
You know, I did want to ask. So the first email, 20% personalized. Day two, you get a follow-up email called Thoughts.
Yeah.
Is that personalized? Or is that template?
It's not, it's template. Okay. And people love and hate this email. Like I right. swear, like there is a very, as in all things, right? Like
tell me a story, paint me a word yeah. picture.
yeah. So like all this thing is just says, hey Colin, any thoughts on the email below? That's it. And it just like, we probably win most of our meetings off of that email. And it's just like, really? Like that's it. And I don't know, because it's not personalized. It's none of the things you should be doing, but it wins a ton. Now we added a little like GIF to it. That's got a kid saying like crossing my fingers chat. And that makes it like, I don't know. People like that occasionally. Other people curse us out for it, but it's human. So that wins a ton, but there's no personalization to it.
Okay. And so obviously the call is personalized. Mm-hmm. And that's day three. You're waiting for day three for a call. Cool.
It's just been for us, what we typically say is we have this like side engagement cadence. And so we get a lot of engagement from our day one and two, mm-hmm. Emails. And so if basically it's like an if then, like if they click or open our emails in day one or two, they go off to the side cadence and we call them sooner. Like we call them right away.
Okay.
Don't engage. Then we go to step three. And that's just because we found we were wasting a lot of time trying to call that we weren't getting engagement and we weren't like, I would rather have them spend some time like working on the hot list, the hot leads and stuff. And then they go back into that step three call.
What percentage comes from the side cadence versus the integrated call steps?
Oh man, that's a great question. I would say it is probably 60-40. When we get good connects and stuff, most of it's coming from 60-40 to 70-30 engagement versus regular steps.
Gotcha. Okay.
Good. So, well, I mean, it's really simple, right? Like, hey, you clicked on an email and I just happened to show up kind of on that call screen right away. And I call you and say, hey, Colin, how's it going? This is Kyle with Lessonly. I mean,
yeah,
it's going to convert so much better because you're thinking about it, whether you want it to be or not.
That's fair. That's fair. And then you've got another personalized email on day five. So if you've already gone through this like personalized problem statement, what happens here? Yeah.
It was a really big challenge for us because we wanted more personalization and we realized we were just hitting send all. So what we've challenged our reps to do is if their first email is 150 words, we said, all right, do the exact same email in 25 words or 50 words. So we just tried to get them to shorten it up and say like, same thing. Hey, Chris, congrats on the funding. Super exciting for you. Reaching out because we typically help sales leaders during this time. We're helping them do better work. Something you're interested in, Kyle. Like, hopefully it kind of jogs the memory, but it's just real short. And that was a really bad example I just said, but like you get the gist.
Yeah, I gotcha. And then you send a demo video. Is this like, am I using like view edit, not view edit? Man, I'm totally drawing a blank. I had their like product, one of their sales guys, the video company, Vidyard.
Like Vidyard? Yeah, yeah. So you can do it. We've done it both. We've done a Vidyard one where we say like, hey, Steve, figured it would make sense to show you how I use Lessonly. And so we would like show them how we did that. And it was just okay, neutral results. And so then we just said, let's just take the marketing generic 1 minute product video yeah. and throw that in there. And so that's what we're doing now. And the results are a little bit better than the first, but you can even personalize that. Like we've challenged our reps to like try personalizing that first step, like in that demo video, which is say like, hey, I wanted to give you as a VP of sales a really specific taste about what your reps could do if they didn't know the answer to that question. Hmm. You know, and then show them off the video.
Gotcha. And so in that case, they record like a little intro and then paste on the yep. demo video.
Yep. Yep. They can do that. Absolutely.
Okay. And then final call, obviously same. And then apologies email templated.
Yes. Templated. Not a ton of personalization there. If we see that they had a lot of engagement, if they maybe went off into that side engagement cadence, didn't engage there and then came back over, we might give it a shot and say one more time, like, here's why I was reaching out. But other than that, it's pretty templated.
Okay. Are you doing like the breakup email? Like, I'm never going to email you again. You broke my heart.
No, we do a multiple choice question. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is totally love hate. Like a lot of people love it. A lot of people hate it. It's worked for us. We went on the apologies where we just say, hey, I just wanted to check in one last time. I appreciate you considering this. If you could just help me out, here's four choices. Which one's best? And it's like A, interested, B, not interested, C, interested, but not the right time, D, I can't talk because I've you know, left the country to go be a llama herder somewhere. Like, we say something really cheesy.
Yeah.
And that actually gets a lot of response. People are like, oh, D, totally. And then, you know, we can like go into this, you know, we actually get them to respond, and it works out from there. We're like, oh, great. You want to be a llama herder? Me too. Like, let's go do it together. And you just build that little bit of a relationship.
This is awesome. Cause I was having this exact conversation yesterday with somebody who's saying that doesn't work anymore. And so you have data showing 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 being llama herder. This is working, outperforming better than not llama herder.
Yeah. Yeah. It has worked better than I definitely don't like, and we tried it for a while. I definitely don't like that kind of like, passive aggressive, sorry, like, hey, this is my last time to reach out. And I'm super sorry. We haven't, you know, it's just like, we also run, like, as you can see, like, this is a really tight cadence. Like, this is a 9-day cadence. Most people, you know, you think most times they're running a really long cadence.
You're stretching it, yeah.
This is 9 days. This is a sprint cadence. Like, if you don't get back to you, like, you're going to come back up into our pile about 60 to 90 days later. So like, it's not the end of the world. We're going to find you again, and we're going to try a different cadence on you at that point. So like, it, for us, it's like, hey, it didn't work out. You up for a conversation? If not, okay, that's fine. We'll try again in, you know, 90 days.
If your SDRs are listening, I really hope they make like a Liam Neeson GIF out of you. Like, we will find you, and we will book a meeting with you.
Totally. Totally. That's us, right? Like, that's exactly who we want to be compared to, Liam Neeson and Taken, yeah, for sure. Taken.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Literally the last podcast we recorded, and I think sequentially it'll come out. It'll be the one that came out last week, but I talked with Scott from Outreach, and he said, oh, you know, doesn't like that one. It doesn't work anymore. And I love that you have data saying, hey, this works.
Yeah.
I used to do that all the time. And I remember when Kyle Porter was the first one that I saw that wrote a blog post about it. I cursed because I had been using that for a long time. Never with the third funny one. I think that was the cool, innovative one.
Yeah.
I know Aaron had used that a ton when he was at Salesforce. But I'd used the, like, is it A, you know, you're not interested. B, you're the wrong person. 3, you're interested, but it's just not a good time. I used to use that all the time. And then I was worried, like, okay, everybody started doing that. I'm like, okay, maybe it's expired. Maybe I should stop doing that. But you're saying it's working. So I'm pumped.
Yeah. And that's the whole point of the testing thing, right? And like, listen to your market, listen to your network, like, listen to people around you, but also trust your internal testing that you do. I think that's kind of another lesson that I've gotten this. I think it's really easy to look good on LinkedIn and you scroll, like, you just scroll. And I'm connected to a lot of other SDR managers, and you scroll and they're like, we're doing this. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. I should totally be doing that. And like, then you scroll again and someone else is like, we're doing this and it's working so well. And I'm like, I literally just failed that email. Like, we just tried that and it did not work. And so you're just like, what are we doing wrong? But trust your gut a little bit, have some confidence. I think learn from the people around you, but you know, if you believe something, like, the testing will help you confirm or deny that and be okay with either.
That's great, man. And so we've gone through your email templates. We've gone through your cold call script. We talked about your process, and I pulled all the knowledge I selfishly wanted to learn from you. I want you to talk to me about the impact this has had. Cause this, you know, I'm sure people are sitting here going, yeah, this sounds like a lot of work. You know, this is quite a front loader process. Mm-hmm. You get quite a bit of touch points in 9 days. Talking about the impact that, not just that, like, I think there's two parts. Is one, that you spend a ton of time testing your process. And I think that was sort of like, we buried the lead a little bit in that, you know, that was kind of the hidden theme of this episode. But two, you also were selling the dream. And so talk to me about the impact before and after.
Yeah. So one, I think the initial impact that we see is people are actually recognizing less and less out on the streets. Like, so like that is us selling the movement. Like, that is us talking about what we're doing here. And there's no way to measure that. Like, we just, people walk in the airport with a llama shirt on or the Less and Lee L, and they're like, oh, hey, Less and Lee. Like, that's a win, whether they're a customer or not. That's a win for us. And so we have seen more of that. Like, we have seen growth in the market. We've seen notice, like, brand awareness there. So just by getting our SDRs talking about the movement and sharing the brand that we have created on our marketing side and putting it into the hands of the SDRs and trusting these young, hungry professionals with that, huge, huge market awareness win for us. Specifically for SDRs. I think the cool story is that, you know, 18 months ago, before we were doing this, we had basically 9 commercial SDRs. And, you know, on a given week, we were scraping, I felt like, for 15 meetings. Like, it just wasn't clicking. And there were a lot of factors for that. But it's just, at times, it was just like, felt like a slug, like just walking through quicksand. Like, you just couldn't get the next one to come for whatever reason. Fast forward now. So that was 9 SDRs doing that, trying to get 15 meetings a week. And we were like, that was a win. Fast forward now, we have 6 SDRs. So just with the growth of the company and the way we've kind of push things around, we've actually subtracted a little bit from that headcount, but they are more efficient, more effective. They're actually, it's pretty easy for them to get to 20 meetings a week. So we added 5 net meetings with 3 less headcount. Just because we were able to test and iterate, move really fast, but also inside of that, like, move the messaging forward and move it to kind of a brand first, like selling this movement, this idea of better work. People are responding and responding to that a lot. And there's no way to measure this, but we get a ton of polite no's, which is great. Like, that's okay. I'm okay with that. So I think those are the quantitative ones that I definitely talk about. Oh, and the last one being that, we have upped our account to meeting. We used to be at about 8%. Like, we could put 100 accounts, we'd get 8 meetings out of it. Now, if we take 100 accounts, we can get about 12 to 15 out of it.
That's great. Those are good. Those are really good numbers. Cool. And I bet your marketing loves all those polite no's. Feels like, especially rolling out under marketing. I think one thing I always hear when talking to a marketer about predictable revenue, they're like, well, we don't want to send cold email because it'll damage the brand.
Yeah. But like, they're totally willing to use like a marketing automation to like shoot out a ton of stuff. So like, I don't know. Just get aligned on what the why. Like, we went back to it. Like, get aligned on what the mission is, and don't be afraid to give that to salespeople and like let them push that out there. Let them be the boots on the ground. Let them go spread the word about what's going on here. But you can't just lead with we're a software, we're a SaaS product that does X, because that will fail to resonate, because they're getting hit with tons of those messages every day. And I tell you what, the best metric of all of this, like the best thing for us, is that we have a happier, we have a more engaged, we have a more focused team of sales development reps, which is a true testament. I mean, that's the best part about coming to work here every day. Is we have a group of people who are just really, really happy to come in here and bust their butts for it. And I think that definitely is a result of us kind of pushing into talking about this dream of doing better work, rather than just like, hey, you get a cold call 100 people and talk about software.
Awesome. I totally agree. And I think that's what it's about at the end of the day, is you want to have happy people, you want to have a good process, and you want to create happy customers. So I think what we're talking about here is sort of hitting the nail on the head for all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Delight them at every turn.
I feel like I've taken up so much of your time, and I want to steal just a little bit more. We're going to do something new that I'm
great.
Not doing. And if you're listening and you like it, let me know. So we're going to get to the cold call segment in a bit. And yes, I did tell Kyle this time. I forgot last week. And Scott was a champion about it.
But, okay. I had 30 seconds to prepare, so I'm ready to go.
So we're going to do the lightning round. So starting with, and I'm actually going to set a timer here just so I make sure that I'm keeping us.
Okay.
We're going to give you, a minute tops. And we got 3 questions. So ready?
Go.
What do you do when people are brushing you off on the phone? They're giving you the no thanks.
We accept it and we send them an email, but we send that email with a Sendoso coffee. And we say, hey, you must be totally busy, totally respect it. Next time you go to coffee, it's on us. Enjoy it. Hopefully we can reconnect.
So what if you get deeper in the conversation and they're like, you get to the, you've had the value prop. So you get them, you get through the intro, you get through the reason for your call, you get their permission, and they say, no thanks, not interested.
Okay. We just ask, all right, great. What are the top 3 rocks you're trying to move? And we just ask them, like, what are the top 3 rocks you're trying to move? See if they will answer that. They typically will give you 1 or 2. And then we follow up. Again, we follow up with an email. We're kind of okay not being totally like super, super pushy. Because again, we know we're going to get them. We're just going to try the next time. We'd rather play the long game to build the relationship.
Beautiful. All right. How do you get people to respond to your emails?
Really relevant human messaging. Like, always ask yourself, would I respond to this email? Like, does this sound like me? And when we do that, people respond. Again, we get a lot of polite no's, but we get a ton of yeses as well. So don't be afraid to just be really human in the way you message.
Awesome. Last question. What do you do when you need to push really hard at the end of the quarter?
man, any type of spiff we can. And the team spiffs are the one that win. So we have a green bus that drives around Indy and takes you to different breweries. And we said, all right, team, if we get 100 meetings in the next 2 weeks, we'll take you on the green bus. And it was like the best, like we crushed that goal because it was a team incentive. So it's all about team spiffs. We love those. And it just, man, it rocket shipped our 2 weeks at the end of a quarter.
That is awesome. I wish we had a green bus here in Vancouver.
Get a green bus. I'm telling you, it's a little mini bus. It's perfect. And they just take you around to like all the different breweries. And you can like drink the beer on the bus because you've got a driver and everything. And it was by far the best spiff we had ever done. I was shocked at how excited we got talking about. We had a green bus emoji when people set meetings.
That's awesome. Did you do it at the end of every quarter now?
We do something different. Yep. At the end of every quarter.
Right on. So cold call segment. So now you get a chance to pitch anything you want in the Most Sales Podcast way. You're going to cold call me. So
oh, man.
Set the stage.
This is where I tell all my SDRs to sign off and don't touch me. Why don't you be a sales leader? You can be a VP or a director. And we've used the Series B. So you just raised a Series B round, $25 million, whatever the norm is there. So let's just say that. And does that give you enough context?
Yep.
Perfect.
All right. You ready? Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin. This is Kyle Roach with Lessonly. How you been?
I'm good. I'm just heading into a meeting. You got, what do you want?
Hey, no worries. I hope the meeting goes well. Hey, I wanted to give you a call and see if you could help me out. You guys just completed that awesome fundraise. And typically what that means for sales teams is a lot of growth in people and product and processes. And that just means that a lot of your reps are going to need to level up their work. So I wanted to just ask you one question here. Who in your sales org, is it you or somebody else that owns all the rep training and coaching?
That's me.
That's all you? Oh man. Well, I know you're running into a meeting and I know I'm calling you out of the blue. So I'll just be respectful of your time and say this. We love partnering with teams like yours who are growing and really want to help their reps do better work. A lot of teams have joined us on this mission to make training and learning everyday occurrences in their org. And honestly, we're a better company because of it. So we're a training software. It's a lot to go into. And I understand that we're not going to change anyone's mind, especially in 30 seconds, but definitely in 30 minutes. But would you be open to discussing this a little bit more maybe next week? And we can chat and I can show you around a training software for your sales team.
And that sounds good. I was trying to find one more objection and then I'm like, no, you're honestly doing a good job. So.
Hey. Thanks. I appreciate that. So all the VPs of sales, like if you get that pitch, that's because we're going to test it next week.
Awesome. Kyle, thanks so much for coming on the show. I feel like I learned a ton. Thank you so much.
Hey, I'm glad to do it. I learned a ton as well. And it's always a pleasure to help everybody out.
If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to track you down?
LinkedIn is the best way. I'm trying to build my own brand on there as well. So hit me up on LinkedIn, Kyle Roach, R-O-A-C-H. At Lessonly, would love to connect.
Cool. I'm going to throw your LinkedIn link in the show notes as well. So if anybody's trying to track that down, you can hit up Kyle there. I'm just clicking on it to make sure I'm putting the right link in there. And yeah, there you are, the yellow Lessonly background. All right, man.
Perfect.
Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Colin. I appreciate it, man.
All right. See ya.
Bye.